Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pawlowski, and everything sucks. Like, I mean, globally, on the whole, like, in the big picture, everything fucking sucks. But on Raw last night, something sucked. Some things went nowhere. There are at least two feuds on Raw that have been going on for so long with no sign of ever ending that it does feel like we're all going to be dead and gone, and the sun will eventually die out, and the earth will just be a frozen husk. And yet those feuds will somehow be continuing. But also we got a major, major development that I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's going to turn out to be horrifically bad. I'm saying that because I know WWE, because I watch it. I've been watching it, all of it, for the past 4 to 5 years. Like, there were times where I would take a break, come back, and be like, what the hell's going on? And I'd catch up, you know. But because it's been my job for 4.5 years now, and because I was watching it pretty regularly before I got this job, 5 years, I have seen everything. So I know what they do, what they don't do, and they are going to fuck this up so hard. But there exists an itsy-bitsy, eensy-weensy, minuscule little speck of an atom's chance that this major development that occurred last night on Raw may turn out to be one of the greatest creative decisions in the history of professional wrestling. But like I said, there's a teeny, eeny, beeny, eensy, weensy, tiny little minuscule atom's chance of that happening. And a huge motherfucking chance of that thing being just horrible, like a Hindenburg air disaster level of a crash and burn, levels of fuckery like you would not believe how bad this shit is gonna turn out. That's way more likely to happen than the good thing. And the title of this episode is Optimism is a Disease. And WWE is the cure. I used to think that there was a chance that they couldn't possibly fuck this up. Like, it's right there. It's right there. You've got these amazing, talented performers and a decent enough storyline with a lot of potential for, like, nuance and good story beats. Like, it could go from here to here to here, and then, ooh, a little swerve ski. Got a whole new avenue. Oh, whole avenue of new possibilities. What happens, though? Same fucking shit. They fuck it all up. I have not been really genuinely optimistic about something happening really great in WWE in a long time. Like a long time. I really loved, people will remember, I really loved that segment, the Raw after the Rumble, where Randy attacked Edge. Ultimately, that led fucking nowhere. And a lot of that is because of COVID. I can't imagine how at an actual WrestleMania with Edge versus Orton. Orton like being beaten by Edge, getting revenge for that happening with actual story beats being played out on Raw over several weeks leading up to WrestleMania, and that cathartic moment of Edge beating Orton. I can't imagine of how great that would have been. But it ended up being nothing. And they could have done other things after that, but no. The same old bullshit Legend Killer stuff. Like, a lot of it has been decent, but then they just tread water. And tread water and tread water and tread water until, for example, last night, the show opens with Randy Orton sitting on a folding chair backwards like he's a cool youth pastor. All right, kids. All right. Hey, come on. Gather around. Pull up a chair. You can turn around backwards like me if you want. If you don't want to be cool, that's cool too. But we're going to rap about Jesus and about how he died for your sins and how that was the coolest thing that's ever happened. Let's talk about it. That is who Randy Orton was. And he decided since last week that he was going to write some fan fiction. And he's going to read it to you. Because he worked really hard on it. Like, he stayed up all night, and it was a school night. He stayed up all night, and he wrote it all out and told you exactly what happened. Because when I walked in to that Legends Lounge, they had been playing poker all night. And I had thought all night about how I was going to do it, which is why I wore a janitor's costume. And then I walked in there, and I put on my night vision goggles that I totally bought from an army surplus store. I showed him my fake ID, and I totally bought these night vision goggles. And I put them on, and I turned them on, and I shut out the light. And then Big Show came at me, and I hit him in his hands with my chair. I hit him in his hands, and I conked him on the noggin, and he fell down over there. Right over there. That's where he fell down. And then next was Christian. Christian was flailing around. He didn't even know where I was. But I walked up behind him and said, "Say hi to Edge for me." I whispered it right in his ear. I said, "Say hi to Edge for me." Because that makes me sound cool that I said that to him, even though I totally didn't send that to him. But I'm saying that I did because I want myself to sound cool. And then, after I hit Christian, then old Shawn Michaels, I hit him too. And he fell down. And I kicked him in the head. That's what I did. I kicked him in the head. I didn't use the chair on him. I kicked him in the head, which is why he was laid down on his belly across four chairs. And then Ric Flair was trying to go for the door. But Ric Flair, he's old and he can't see right. And also, it was dark. I forgot to mention. I mentioned it was dark. I was wearing night vision goggles. And he's trying to go for the door handle. And I hit him in the head. And I knocked him down because I'm Randy Orton. Now, he didn't say it like that. But that's what he said. Randy Orton came in, put on the fucking ski goggles, turned out the light, and then turned it back on 4.5 seconds later. All of the shit that he describes in his fan fiction, there's no way all of that could have happened in the time the lights were off. It's just not possible. So it's all bullshit. Even if the lights had been out for 3 minutes, none of that shit happened. Giving it to him to read, make him seem, you know, more of a badass that he had attacked dudes, like three guys, the youngest of whom I think is like 50. I mean, no, I guess Christian's younger than 50, but he's been out of wrestling for a while because he's hurt. So he attacked an invalid, a giant guy who's 50, an old man, another guy who's in his 50s with brain-addled disease, and then in an old man, and he did it at night with the lights off where they couldn't defend themselves. Ooh, what a badass you are!
Really?
So he says that he's gonna. This whole thing has been leading up to him having a match with Drew McIntyre inside Hell in a Cell. Arn Anderson said something, I don't know if it was this week. I read the quote this week. I'm assuming he gave the interview recently. Hell in a Cell used to be a big event match because you would only do it when it really needed to be done to end a feud, a major undertaking, something that has happened has to end the way we ended it in Hell in a Cell. When you name a pay-per-view Hell in a Cell and you do like two, maybe three matches inside Hell in a Cell, like it cheapens it. It cheapens it. It's not nearly as cool as it was because it's all the same fucking shit. There's only so many things you can do inside Hell in a Cell. Then you're like, okay, well, let's climb on top of the cell. Okay, well, that's different. Okay, that's good. Let's break through the wall of the cell. Well, that's technically against the rules. The whole point is that you can't get through the wall. It's the cell in which hell exists. Anyway, so we got Roman versus Jay inside Hell in a Cell. We got Drew versus Orton inside Hell in a Cell. I can't imagine you're going to do Bayley versus Sasha at Hell in a Cell and not put it inside Hell in a Cell. That's the one fucking match of those three that deserves to be inside Hell in a Cell. But who knows? Anyway, Orton says some vaguely threatening things to Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre shows up because Randy Orton is broadcasting saying where he is. So if Drew wants to fight him, that's the easy way to get there. Oh, you say you're in that room? Oh, and you want me to come fight you? And I do want to fight you? Oh, well, there you go. So he comes in and he beats up Randy, and Randy gets away, and everybody holds Drew back. And Drew does a lot of this. Except it's in Scottish, so he's saying, I'm gonna get ya! Randy Orton! So they promoted Randy and Dolphin and Rude. Rude Steady at Bebolf as his henchman versus Drew McIntyre and the Street Profits for some reason, because I guess the Street Profits need somebody to face at Hell in a Cell. And so Rude's back. Why not them and Ziggler, since what the fuck else are you going to do? There's no fucking tag teams anymore. Ivar's out forever with a fucking neck injury, and Andrade's not even on the fucking show last night. But then again, I don't even know fucking who's got COVID, who's quarantining. Garza's been off for 2 weeks because he had that injury at the pay-per-view. They have nobody to face, so why not Rude and Ziggler? Oh, Jesus. God. Anyway. So that's your advertised main event. It's going to become very obvious by the end of the show that should not have been the main event. And we'll talk about that when we get to it. Opening match is Zelina Vega in the ring. She's joined by Lana and Natalya. And she's facing Mandy Rose, Dana Brooke, and Asuka. And that seems like somebody just hit random at the WWE 2K character choice. Let's do a six-woman tag, and I don't fucking care. Random. Asuka, Mandy Rose, and Dana Brooke. All right, fuck it. Let's see what happens. Okay, Zelina lost at the pay-per-view in a match she probably shouldn't have had. Then she got a rematch the next night on Raw and lost again. And then she got dressed down by Andrade while clutching her elbow. So I was like, this seems like a thing where they're going to take Zelina off TV for a few weeks. She'll come back. She'll win a few matches leading up to something. If you want to put her back in title contention by, let's say, December, go ahead and figure a way to do that. No. She's firmly feuding with Asuka now. She went from a manager to having what appears to be three Raw women's title matches in the span of a month. This is a show on which Bianca Belair exists. Like, I know they're giving her stupid fucking promos. They had one this week. I'll talk about it now. Where she's playing some trivia game with three women and really being obnoxious about it. And the first one where she beat it, she was like, proved she was stronger than a dude and better at him in the gym. I was like, okay, cool. You know, like you've obviously you've proven that you're not to be trifled with because you can hang with guys and everything. Okay, cool. That's what they're trying to say. The next week, she was really obnoxious in winning a bunch of track and field stuff. And then she was like extra obnoxious last night in the trivia thing. Like, are they making her a heel? Like, I don't, maybe they're not. Maybe Vince says this is what you should do. If you're really talented and smart and strong and fast, you should rub it in everybody's faces. Everyone should hate how much better that you are than they are. That's what everybody should feel. That's honestly what I think Vince thinks. So him, you know, assigning it to his superstars is not unheard of. But here's the deal. If Zelina can walk down to the ring after having had, like, no matches in WWE and say, Asuka, I'm ready for Asuka. I'm ready for a title shot. And Asuka says yes. And then she loses that title shot. And then she wants another one, so she gets another one the next night. And then the following week, she's in a tag match where she's obviously placed as the foil to Asuka again, which might lead to another title match. If you can just do that, why doesn't Bianca Belair do that? Why doesn't she say, I'm the EST of WWE, I'm going to beat you, Asuka? What, if she's so confident, if you portraying her as this incredibly confident, bordering on arrogant person, and all you have to do to get a title match is walk up to the champion and say, I'm better than you, I want a title match, and they give you one, why in the world isn't Bianca Belair doing that? Like, I want her to have that opportunity. I'm saying that as a fan of Bianca Belair in her work. I'm saying that also as a wanting to the product to be better. And Bianca Belair is worlds better as an everything than Zelina Vega is right now. She's better than anybody else they have on Raw, considering they've decided to shove Shayna Baszler into this fucking tag division. Shayna Baszler. I'm also saying it because in kayfabe, it makes no sense. Why is she spending all of her time showing up gym rats, racing people who weren't NCAA All-Americans, and dominating her girlfriends at trivia when she could be walking out to the ring and challenging Asuka to do a title match? It doesn't make any sense for her to not do it. So why is she not doing it? You, WWE, you created this. You created a scenario in which all you got to do is walk down to the ring and demand a title match and you get one. So why is this person who's the most confident person in the locker room not doing that? Oh boy. This match is, it's a six-woman tag match. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Lana looks terrible. They do some terrible double team move with her and Natalya. By the way, I mean, like, I don't even like Natalya, like, as a performer. Like, I know she has incredible longevity, and she's technically very sound. I don't enjoy watching her matches. I don't like Natalya. And I feel so sorry for Natalya that they've saddled her with Lana. Especially Lana, this Lana. The Lana that is being actively punished for her husband going to another wrestling company. Lana tags in Natalya, and Natalya takes Mandy and is like trying to get her up for a suplex. And I don't know why Lana thought this this move can't happen unless I kick Mandy in the butt first. But, like, she tries and misses. Like, Mandy is standing there. Mandy's standing there, like, Natalya's got her arm up over her neck. She's ready to give her the suplex. Lana tries to kick Mandy in the butt and misses. She gets closer and tries to kick Mandy in the butt and hits a glancing blow. Then she regains her balance, walks over, and actually kicks her in the butt. Lightly, not hard or anything. Not like trying to like damage her hamstring, just like placing the flat of her foot up against her buttocks. That's it. But she had to do it 3 times to get it right. Mandy gets a huge win by pinning Lana. I'm pretty sure like a fucking department store mannequin could pin Lana. It's not an achievement. But Mandy Rose's running high knee looks good. Again, I have to say this again. Months ago, you started a feud with her and Sonya Deville, in which Sonya Deville became a goddamn bona fide megastar in the industry through the power of her righteous healing. And you decided, let's put Mandy over in this feud. I don't know if you would have or not. It was looking like you might have done that, even if Sonya, and also technically Mandy, weren't the victim of a stalker who wanted to, I don't know, chop him up in little bits, put him in a duffel bag, and drive across state lines with him. The guy was a fucking Looney Tune. It's amazing and wholly fortuitous that they got out of that situation alive. So let's put the Sonya Deville thing on hold and give Mandy the win in the feud. And what you got out of that was her teaming with Dana Brooke on Raw. And then, of all fucking things, you run a goddamn exclusive to the internet video interview of Mandy Rose where they're asking her about the goddamn draft. Whether or not she's worried about the draft. She just got here 2 fucking weeks ago. Like, obviously she's not worried about the draft. Why would she be worried about the draft? If you were to draft her from Raw to SmackDown, what the fuck is SmackDown trading her to Raw for to begin with? We still haven't figured out what the fuck SmackDown got back in the trade. You've never told us that shit. If you motherfuckers traded Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke to Raw for nothing and then draft her back to SmackDown in the draft, 2 weeks later, you are officially the most incompetent bag of fuckwits in the history of fucking television. The fuck? Stop interviewing everybody about the draft. Interview a few people, sure. But not this person, who obviously isn't moving back to SmackDown. And if she does, what a horrible indictment that is on all of you, you incompetent bag of fuckwits. Anyway, immediately after the match, the winners leave, and they go up to the top of the ramp and pose. Natalya's checking on Lana. Vega's very angry. All of a sudden, out comes Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Remember the last 2 times we saw Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler on Raw? What did they do? Well, Nia Jax ended up Samoan dropping Lana through a table. The announce table. Guess what fucking happened last night? Well, there was a twist. Nia Jax was about to Samoan drop Natalya through the announce table. But Lana fought back. So, Nia Jax just tossed Natalya to the ground, picked up Lana, and put her through the table. I don't know how many Samoan drops through a table is equal to my husband left this company to go and work for AEW. But I'm hoping we're getting to that point, because I understand you want to punish Lana because her husband left the company. I understand you're a horrible, petty, vindictive son of a bitch, Vince McMahon. But in doing that punishment to Lana, you're effectively punishing all of us. Because we have to watch the same fucking spot every fucking week. Figure out something else to do. You got Shayna Baszler there. Here's an idea you can feel free to use. I'm going to give you this one for free. Shayna Baszler likes to choke out people. Maybe one week, just, you know, change things up a bit. Have Shayna choke out Lana. Instead of, you know, put her to the table. I mean, it's effectively the same thing. Or, you want to get even more brutal, have Shayna do the little thing where she stomps on Lana's elbow. Do that. Here's what you do. Every week, you have Shayna break another one of Lana's limbs. So she's coming out in two walking boots and two slings. Now, wouldn't that be humiliating for Lana? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be totally humiliating to her, and also, by extension, her husband? Because, as we all know, according to you, Vince, a woman and her husband, they're the same thing. You're attacking her to get to him, because really she only exists as an extension of her husband. So really, when you're hurting her, you're hurting him. And that's the most important thing, right? To hurt this guy who left your company after you gaslit him about how his merch was only selling because people were buying it ironically or some fucking shit. All I'm saying is, if you're going to keep doing the same shit, at least make it interesting. But hey, I guess Shayna and Nia are now cleared to wrestle, and they'll be defending their titles against the Riot Squad tonight, which means last night. <sighs> 24/7 bullshit. R-Truth is holding a mock draft. Ha ha, with little Jimmy, his invisible friend. Ha ha, I guess. And a guy is there, dressed as a janitor. Was also a ninja. He's a ninja. He's a ninja janitor. He's a ninja janitor. The ninja janitor wields a mop over his head and whatever. And R-Truth calls him Randy Orton because, get it? Because last week the janitor thing. And it turns out to be Drew Gulak, and Drew Gulak, I don't know, he tries to run away? I don't know why he runs away, but he runs over and knocks over a trash can, and the trash can is, right? No? Oh, that's later. Fuck it, all fucking bleeds together. Drew Gulak rolls up Truth for the title. Truth tells little Jimmy, we got. It's true. You and your little imaginary friend, you both got. All of the getting was gotten by you. So later in the night, because I'm putting these two fucking things together, because why not? There's a Drew Gulak runs and hides, and he says, Drew Gulak, God bless him. He's trying so hard. Another guy who, I don't know, is he on Raw now? When did that happen? Was he also traded to Raw from SmackDown? Was Braun Strowman? Actually, no, that's right. He wasn't. We'll talk about that in a second. Drew Gulak, I guess, yes, unless he's working at the Amway Center as a janitor now, trying to get some supplemental income because he can't open a cameo anymore. But Gulak stops, says, when I write my book all about preparedness or something, it'll be a chapter in my book about being prepared and always keeping your head on a swivel or some bullshit. And then R-Truth is inside a dumpster, and Drew Gulak runs away and runs into a trash can, and inside the trash can is Akira Tozawa, get it because Akira Tozawa is small because he's Japanese and a ninja. And then all three of them go into the big dumpster and they all fight. And the ref, we don't see what happens in the dumpster. We're just going to take the ref's word for it. But he counts 1, 2, 3 on the side of the dumpster. And I guess R-Truth is the champion again. So here's what happens. Every week, R-Truth starts the night as the champion and ends the night as the champion. But along the way, he loses the title and then he gets it back. Every week. I hate the 24/7 championship. Backstage, Ali, Ricochet, and myself, Ali, Ricochet, and Apollo Crews are all hanging out, talking backstage. MVP walks up, and Ali's like, I want to hear your excuses for why I beat you last week. You know, blah, blah, blah. No. I heard you talking about us. I heard you talk about the draft. But here's the deal. One night only, we got an opening in the Hurt Business. You've seen what Hurt Business has done for Cedric Alexander. Well, actually, we've seen how he hasn't been on TV for 2 weeks. But COVID? Question mark? Don't know. Cedric is still there, but he wants to add somebody else. So you all got one shot. The first one who says yes gets to come to the thing. So, we're not going to do this. We're going to pay no attention to you. But then Cruz and Ali walk off, but it looks like Ricochet is like, should I or should I not? Not really sure. Another chapter in As the Mysterio Turns. We get Seth Rollins and Murphy come back. We show the long fucking thing, what's going on with the fucking Mysterio clan. Rollins yells at Murphy to give him the mic. And Murphy says, no, I've been the ideal disciple for you for months now. He could have said, along the way, you had three other disciples. AOP, Austin Theory, what happened to them? They left you, or you kicked them to the curb. But I've been loyal to you this whole time. I was your first real disciple. You and AOP, you started this thing together, but you don't need them anymore. What the hell are they? You recruited me, but that was my low point, and I gave everything I had to the greater good. Austin Theory came and went. I hear he's back on NXT now. Whatever happened to that? But no, I'm here. I've always been here. That might have been something to good. You know, wrap it up. You know, little bow. No? Why not? Hey, remember? Long time ago now. This was pre-WrestleMania. I think it was back during the actual arena matches. Arena Raws, like regular shows. Pre-COVID, if there is such a time. When one night, during a match with Kevin Owens, the ref did a fast count in favor of Seth Rollins. And the ref was revealed under his ref shirt to be wearing a Seth Rollins shirt. It was revealed that the ref was a secret Rollins disciple the whole time. Now, they handled that poorly. They made it look like Seth had no idea, like legitimately, not like he was faking like he had no idea, but like honestly, he had no idea. What they should have done from that moment is have it be so you'll never know. You'll never know who is a disciple of Seth Rollins. You'll never know because I have agents everywhere. You know what I mean? Like Fight Club. Like you never know who's the guy who's there, who's secretly working for the Brad Pitt character, and Ed Norton's like, hey, how do you know who I am? Is that a quick trick question, sure? Like that kind of a fucking thing. Like you could have Buddy Murphy being the Ed Norton character trying to figure out who the hell is like, oh, but that's fun. All I gotta do is like the security guy in the parking lot is secretly a Seth Rollins guy. You have a tag team that breaks apart because one of them turns out to be a Seth Rollins guy. All of this could happen. Seth could have had a disciple, a stable of like 6 to 8 dudes. Who were Seth Rollins guys? You could have called up a guy from NXT. And then his first match, he turns out to be a Seth Rollins disciple. He'd been watching Seth Rollins talk for a while, you know, down at Full Sail. And for some reason, something just clicked. I understand so much now. That kind of a shit. A space monkey. Ready to be shot into space. You know what I mean? Like some real Fight Club Tyler Durden shit. But now, all we got since that point is a series of descending fart noises. To the point where Seth Rollins is feuding with the whole Mysterio clan because something. And Murphy is the only guy who's still there because, yeah, I guess. So anyway, Murphy wants Seth to apologize to Aaliyah for showing their DMs to the world. But Seth's like, I didn't even show all of them. You know that. There was a bunch of stuff she told you about how she actually feels about her family. About all this stuff. Like she thinks that Dominic is the chosen one and she secretly hates her dad and blah, blah, blah. All that stuff. But I didn't show that to everybody.
It seems kind of like you're showing it to him now.
Anyway, Murphy says, you're gonna apologize. He's like, no, this is not how it works. I don't apologize for anything. I'm Messiah. You're the disciple. You apologize to me. He repeats until Dominic Mysterio and Humberto Carrillo come out. And they have a tag match. That was what they were up there to begin with for, I suppose. Humberto Carrillo now has a little beard, a little beard around the chin, a little bit of a wispy mustache. She looks not like he's not so cherubic anymore, and that's good. Cut his hair, it's not as floppy. He's still amazing athletically in the ring. It's some really cool shit that he could do. I'm happy for him. He and Mysterio look like they could be a really good tag team. Like, would you be surprised in the least if the Street Profits lose the titles to Rude and Ziggler, to Rude, Steady, and Bebop? And then those heels are a 6-week transitional champion, and Mysterio and Carrillo become the next tag champs, and they have a decent run. Would you be surprised at all? I wouldn't. Would you be surprised if maybe not now, but if Dominic and Humberto Carrillo become tag champs at WrestleMania next year? Because I wouldn't be surprised. They seem to be very, very high on Dominic as a thing. And Carrillo seems to be a natural partner for him. They're both, like, he's even more athletic as Dominic and can teach him some stuff. It seems good. And that's just fine. Carrillo and Mysterio have some cool little tandem moves. The match ends when... Murphy tosses Dominic over the barrier. Rollins has been yelling at Murphy all the time, like, you don't tag in, I tag you in, you don't tag yourself in. And eventually Carrillo, they're arguing at ringside. Rollins and Murphy are. Carrillo does this cool corkscrew Fosbury floppy type thing off over the ropes and lands on them both, throws Murphy in the ring with the idea of going to put him away, jumps off the top rope, but Murphy nails him between the eyes with a jumping knee that looks fucking brutal. It's absolutely the right move to have it finish the match right there. That's good, but then Rollins is pissy at Murphy for having won, I guess. Murphy marches away and Rollins follows him, I guess. So Adam Pearce is on the phone. Scrap that, Adam Pearce. Assistant to the regional manager, general manager, Adam Pearce is backstage. And he says, Braun Strowman shows up like, listen, on the Raw Underground ain't happening tonight. I didn't drive all the way down here for nothing. I'm going to kick somebody's ass. And if you don't give me a match, I'm going to go in the locker room and beat everybody. and he's wearing his extra schmedium shirt and his gloves with carbon fiber knuckles, so you know he means business. Adam Pearce says, you're still technically on SmackDown. I know the draft is next week. You're still technically on SmackDown. Shane has been having you come here for Raw Underground. That's his deal. It's not my deal. I can't book you in a sanctioned match on Raw since you're technically on SmackDown. Now, Braun should have said, what about the brand invitational? Couldn't you invite me here? Couldn't you, Adam Pearce, invite me as part of the brand-to-brand invitational? And this would be my one match from SmackDown to Raw of the quarter? And then you would put me in an official match? But Braun doesn't say that. Adam Pearce says, I could book you in an exhibition match if anybody will actually agree to take you on. The match isn't going to be sanctioned. It's just going to be, you know, you would beat up some guy, and, you know. Okay?
Like, all right, if that means someone's going to get these hands, we'll actually technically get these gloves with the carbon fiber knuckles, then okay.
And Strowman walks away and Keith Lee walks up. He's got his own merch. He's got a I think it's like a little koozie. It's got Bask in His Glory written on it. And that's wrapped around his water bottle. And he says, sign me up. So Keith Lee versus Braun Strowman. And, you know, you could be forgiven if you had watched WWE recently of thinking, wow, that'll be a great match. What a great match with a clean finish will be Keith Lee versus Braun Strowman. Oh boy, I can't wait for that match, which will surely be booked to have a clean finish. Yeah, that's not how it happened. So Seth Rollins runs up to Murphy backstage and they're blah 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 blah. You want me to apologize to Aaliyah? I think you're the one who needs to apologize. Matter of fact, you have until 10 p.m. to apologize to me, or you're going to pay. I don't know, giving ultimatums and then also like deadlines for ultimatums, that just seems like a really abusive relationship, Seth. I hope you're not behaving like this to Becky. I would be very disappointed in you, Seth, if you were behaving in this manner toward Becky. There's going to be an exclusive interview with Drew McIntyre tonight. I have a question. Who the fuck else is Drew giving interviews to in the middle of Raw? Is he like calling up Fox News? That interview happens a little later. I'll talk about it now. It's not an interview. I expected that exclusive interview to be the, one of those fucking ones where like Michael Cole sits down across from Drew McIntyre, puts a little microphone on his lapel, and they talk seriously about the things that are happening in the WWE championship scene. No, it's just him backstage talking to Charlie Caruso, and all he does is accept the Hell in a Cell stipulation for their match at Hell in a Cell. That's it. That's the whole fucking thing. Fucking stupid. So Kevin Owens has the KO show on last night, where his guests are going to be Bray Wyatt. So he starts off talking about how, you know, the Fiend changes you because, you know, the Fiend gave him the mandible claw on the SmackDown a few days ago. I did appreciate it. He mentions, like, it does change you. I remember, I'll never forget the feeling of his of forcing his hand in my gullet. Good use of the word gullet. And choking the breath out of me. And blah, blah, blah. And so now he picks up his office chairs and throws them out and picks up his KO show sign, throws them out. And just, come on, Bray Wyatt, come on down here so I can beat your ass. And Bray Wyatt, of course, shows up at the Firefly Funhouse and No, that's not very nice, Kevin. I thought we were friends. You invited me on your show like a friend. That's what friends do. He has a little song that he wrote about friendship. He sings it. The puppets sing it. It always works somehow still for me when Bray goes from... Isn't that what friends do? Gosh, I certainly do. Everybody here at the Firefly Funhouse, we just love you, Kevin.
Let him in.
Like, the transition is really, really good. Anyway. They're going to have, they've already announced on Friday, it's Kevin Owens versus The Fiend on SmackDown. Now, Kevin Owens says, you know what? I'm tired of the puppets. I'm tired of you talking in circles. Stupid Mr. Rogers guy. I'm gonna come back to him and I'm going to beat your ass. Now, is the Firefly Funhouse coming from backstage or isn't it? Like, is it? Is it? I think it is, right? It is? Yes, we've established that. But how does Kevin Owens know where? What room? I'm assuming the Amway Center is very large, probably has a lot of suites on the upper levels. Could be anywhere. You could be walking around for a long time to find before you find that, Kevin. Doesn't matter, though, because as he's walking up the ramp, he is attacked by Aleister Black, who has a black mass on him. And we find out later, well, we don't find out later. It's only a internet exclusive video where Aleister Black talks about how Aleister Black was born as Aleister Black. Tommy End became Aleister Black for the first time at TakeOver Orlando, I believe, at the Amway Center. And he talks about how he used to be this guy who was all about duality, about balance. No man is ever truly good. No man is ever truly evil. And while that was an amazing song, he doesn't say this, I say it. That was his theme song. No man is ever truly good. No man is ever truly evil. He lays out the specific character-driven reasons why that can't be his song anymore. Because the old guy used to be about balance, about the balance between good and evil. Now I'm just a vile, disgusting son of a bitch. And I'm so angry, and I can't explain why, but I know it all has to do with you. And this is my problem. He says there's a lot of people I could blame. Seth Rollins, Murphy, but I blame you. And I'm like, why? What did I miss? What did Kevin Owens do that was so much worse than Murphy half-blinding Aleister Black or Seth Rollins ordering Murphy to do that? Somehow Kevin Owens either not showing up for a tag match or being insensitive about the blinding or something, I guess. Somehow that's much worse than whatever Rollins and Murphy did. And I have yet to figure out what that thing was. He's not being very specific about the thing that Kevin Owens did so they're going to have a match next week on Raw. And he wants it to be very barbaric. That's Aleister's word, barbaric. He wants it to be barbaric, this match, on Monday. 3 days after Kevin Owens' match with The Fiend. So here's the only thing that I will say. Kevin Owens wrestles The Fiend, loses to The Fiend, shows up on Monday as a fucking maniac. Like, you know the Kevin Owens who tried to murder his best friend Sami Zayn back in NXT? Like, that guy times 1,000. And he and Aleister Black have an incredibly barbaric fucking match. Really try and hurt each other. I don't know who needs the win more, but I think maybe if you're turning Kevin Owens from like affable dad into like super vicious guy again, maybe he comes out of it ahead. I don't know. The matches that happen on draft night are so weird because you know somebody's going to someplace else. You know, like, here's the deal. Like, Aleister Black wrestling Kevin Owens on Raw after the draft is already half over implies that neither of them will be drafted to SmackDown on Friday. You know, like, you can't, they can't draft Kevin to SmackDown on Friday and then Kevin shows up on Monday to wrestle Aleister. You can't out-wrestle Aleister, you can't draft Aleister to SmackDown on Friday and then 3 days later he shows up on Monday to wrestle Kevin. You can't, my brain can't take all this shit. Just, hey, here's an idea. The people who were drafted from SmackDown to Raw, there will be people who wrestle on Fridays who this Friday will be drafted to Monday, right? So have those people show up for their first night of work on Monday and introduce themselves to the Monday crowd by beating somebody who's still over on Monday. Make them seem like a big deal. I don't know. But don't do this whole thing where you plot out shit fucking a week in advance and then make my brain hurt. So Braun Strowman versus Keith Lee ends almost immediately. It's an exhibition. It's a non-sanctioned match. And yet they have a referee in the middle of the ring. They do the thing where they run into each other. You know how each guy will like run into and use a shoulder block and knock somebody down? Well, they try it on each other. It doesn't work. Strowman gets shoulder blocked back into the ropes. And he uses that momentum to hit a drop kick to send Lee out of the ring. Strowman tries his, you know, Strowman Express chugga chugga woo woo around the ring, but Lee stops that from happening. They fight a little bit, and John Cone, the referee, calls a count out. A double count out. The match never really actually happened or took place, apparently, according to Sean Ross Sapp. 5 out of Keith Lee's 8 matches on Raw have ended in either DQ, interference, non-starter. They have not had a finish. So after the double countout, Strowman's like, "It's a damn exhibition! What are you counting me out for?" Anyway, so they fight on the outside. Strowman runs Keith Lee through the barricade. Strowman then walks up the ramp. Keith Lee stands up. They fight on the stage for a while. Keith Lee gets the better of it, throws him into the LED boards, and then they like basically knocks both of them. He uses his own momentum to knock himself like a dead, but he's like a giant running clothesline that he takes his own momentum with him and Strowman off the stage into some cardboard boxes. And apparently they're going to have this match again next week because, you know, just fucking why not? Ross Sapp had a very easy tweak to this thing. I don't know why you're fucking doing this shit before the draft. Have Strowman get drafted from SmackDown to Raw on Friday. Then on Monday, he shows up and says, "I'm here. Who wants to get these hands? Somebody come out of that damn locker room. I'm going to beat somebody. It's my first night back on Raw." Then Keith Lee comes out. Keith Lee says, "I'll try you, biggin. Let's do it, you and me. I'm tired of people running in and ruining my matches. Who's going to run in and get in between the two of us? Let's go." And then you can even do the same fucking shit with the double countout, leading to a match the next week. Or how about this? At pay-per-view. You could do that, but they didn't do that. There's a tag match, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin versus Apollo Crews and Ricochet. Remember how Ricochet was considering whether or not he might accept MVP's offer to join the Hurt Business, the business of hurting? Ricochet's like, well, I think, you know. Well, first, MVP comes out and says, Retribution, you better not get involved because you, Mr. T-Bag. Get it? T-Bar? Hi. Hey! You're going to scare people with their masks like it's Halloween, but we are really are. We're what nightmares are made of. You better not try us. And then Ricochet comes out. Mustafa Leopold screws. Ricochet comes out. Hey, I know you told us you had to wait until the end of the night, but I just wanted to give you your answer now, MVP. It's a pass! I'm going to say pass! 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 And I'm like, is that supposed to make us like Ricochet? Because he just seems like kind of a tool, you know? But then again, that's what Vince Babyface is. Just a jerk to everybody. Anyway, MVP says, hey, make sure you guys really hurt Ricochet to Bobby and Shelton. And then it's a tag match. And event, it means it's a tag match. What are you going to fucking do? It's a fucking tag match. And Bobby Lashley ends up putting Apollo Crews in the Hurt Lock again. And Crews taps out again. Apollo Crews has only faced members of the Hurt Business and nobody else since June 15th. That's it. He has faced no one other than the Hurt Business since June 15th. That's... Remember when I was talking about feuds that last fucking forever? I thought the Orton and McIntyre feud was lasting too long. That's only been like 2 months. June 15th for Apollo Crews. And I don't... I mean, does it seem like to you like they have a plan of... And oh, you know what? Maybe... Well, we'll talk about this a little bit later. Maybe Apollo and Ricochet do join the Hurt Business because they have nothing else possible right now. Murphy walks around backstage. He finds Aaliyah Mysterio. I've wanted to talk to you all night, says Aaliyah to Murphy. I want to apologize. This Seth Rollins thing has gone too far. It's like, it's not your fault, but it's not me you need to worry about. You're not really considering apologizing to him, are you? I'm not sure. And so he leaves. Murphy, according to the countdown, has 12 minutes left. Oh, no. So the Hurt Business is walking around backstage, and Mustafa Ali walks up. He says, I want you in the ring tonight, and I want you to bring him, and I want you to bring him. Because after I'm done kicking your ass, I'm taking on him, and I'm taking on him. Good for you. Good for you, Ali. A little delusional, perhaps, considering how you've been booked recently, but wait for it. Swerfsky! So Seth Rollins comes out. It's time. I'm waiting your apology. Murphy comes out. We can make this quick and move forward. What's wrong? You had an hour to get it ready, to spit it out. Let's get it over with for the greater good. You've seen firsthand what happens to people who get in the way of the greater good. After all we've been together, I plucked you from obscurity. I made you. All you got to do is apologize. This shouldn't be that difficult. Then Murphy eventually just gets tired of it and tackles him, beats him up, gets a... They brawl on the floor. It was a big brawl. Rollins ends up with a kendo stick, but Murphy blocks it, takes the stick. Murphy hits him with a stick a lot. He's like, Aaliyah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought you into this. I'm so sorry. I'm begging you, please stop. I'm so sorry. See, the thing is that an abusive partner, somebody in the abuser in a relationship, sometimes they will apologize. they'll say it's all their fault. They'll admit they were wrong, but it's all an act. They're just telling you what you want to hear. They figure that maybe if they apologize for what they've done, even insincerely, maybe you'll believe it. And then you'll give them another chance to continue the abuse. Because with them, and with a lot of people who are the victims of abusers, that apology sets everything back to square one. And now the abuse can begin again until you build up to the point where you actually have that chance of possibly leaving them. I was in an abusive relationship once. Yeah, it can happen the other way too. It can happen the other way too, where the woman in the relationship is horribly verbally and emotionally abusive of the partner. It's not fun either way. I just shared with the group. I'm not going to go into details, but it wasn't pleasant. Anyway, that apology from Seth Rollins, also a total lie, because he jumps up from the mat after Murphy drops the kendo stick, and he beats up Murphy, and he takes this kendo stick and starts beating it and beating him and beating him and beating him, and the crowd is booing, or rather, the artificial crowd noise is booing, because we don't talk about that enough, but there's a lot of fucking artificial crowd noise on Raw and SmackDown. And NXT, this new fucking Capital Wrestling Center for SmackDown, a lot of fake crowd noise. We're going to talk about that in a second and how that could be a real problem going forward. But anyway, Rollins goes to ringside after the kendo stick breaks. He gets a chair. He's going to bring the chair in. He's going to hit Dominic. He's going to hit Murphy with it. But then Aaliyah comes in. Please don't. I love him. She doesn't say that, but you know. They're fucking building to it. I know she's of legal age. He's like 13 years older than her, and she's 19. Okay. I myself am 9 years older than my wife. I understand the hypocrisy, kind of. All right? However, context is a thing. It matters. All right? We have enough men in the employ of WWE who like to hit on teenagers in the DMs. Let's not do it as a way to get a guy over as a babyface, okay? Anyway, there's a lot of speculation whether or not all the entire Mysterio family comes down. Rollins drops his chair and runs away. Are they doing this to, like, is it all an act? If it's an act, Jesus, poor Murphy. Is it all an act that, like, they're getting Aaliyah to join the Messiah and to really fuck over her dad and her brother? I don't know. Is this really building to, like, Murphy versus Seth Rollins? If so, great. Murphy can be put over and become a fucking hero. He's so good in the ring, and they never give him a chance to show it. Maybe, I don't know, like, this is where I talk about, like, optimism. Am I optimistic that it'll be Murphy versus Seth, and Murphy will have a fucking coming out party and look like fucking amazing, and Seth will put him over clean, and Murphy will be a really great babyface, awesome future champion in WWE? Am I optimistic? Sure. Do I actually think that's going to happen? Fuck no. They're going to fuck this thing up all the time. Women's tag champs, Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan. It's a full fucking championship match. This is actually not terrible. I mean, Nia Jax doesn't add anything to the proceedings. Shayna Baszler is so good as a heel. She's so fucking great, you guys. I love watching her. She's just toying with Ruby, torturing her, but like nonchalantly. Like it does not, she has no soul. Like there's no empathy for a human being that she's causing this much pain to. None at all. And then like sometimes she's like, yeah, this is actually kind of fun for me. Like she does the whole step on the Ruby Riott elbow thing and then looks over at Liv on the apron, who's like screaming, like she's so distraught over what's happening to Ruby. And she just kind of like smiles with her mouthpiece in. Just like, yeah, well, yeah, that's what I do to your friend. And Nia really doesn't do anything in the match. Nia is the least important person in the match. I mean, surprise, surprise. The only thing that happens of note is that, let's see here. I'm trying to remember. Baszler winds up getting Ruby's back and takes down the Kirifuda clutch. Liv runs in to try and make the save, but Nia runs across the room with some alacrity and is able to like basically pick up Liv and put her on the turnbuckle and like hold her there as Liv tries to squirm over Nia to get to help Ruby. And Ruby is trying to get out of the thing and then trying and trying, and eventually like her eyes go really wide. She starts to turn purple and she just taps furiously. Shayna won't let go. Shayna won't let go. And Shayna won't let go. And Ruby goes limp. And Liv jumps on Shayna and just furiously, while screaming, pulls her off. And it makes Shayna look like this amazing fucking badass who has like this, I don't know, very large woman as a tag partner. Like there's nothing that Nia does that adds to any of this. And when I think, thinking about like 4 months, honestly, since Shayna has been on Raw, she's been like, I want Asuka. I want a one-on-one. You and me, Asuka, for that fucking title. And eventually they were like, well, how about you never mention that again, and you're a tag champion now. I want to see this Shayna, the Shayna who's like just gleeful sometimes, and other times like, yeah, well, you know, whatever, it's my job, about choking bitches out, and then keeping the choke on forever just to really torment the tag partner. That's great shit. Give me that Shayna versus Asuka. Not the Shayna who lost to pregnant Becky in 8 minutes. Street Profits and Drew McIntyre are a really odd couple. Ready, ready, ready. We want the smoke. And Drew McIntyre's like, okay, sure, whatever. Weird. So, MVP versus Mustafa Ali. Early going, Ali winds up ducking the clothesline and nails a big kick to the face, sends MVP out of the ring. So, MVP is out the ring, and he decides, you know what? You two guys, come in there. We're just going to beat his ass. So you get in the ring, three of them versus Mustafa Ali, who's cornered. And then Retribution, the lights go out. Retribution's thing comes up on the Tron. And Retribution comes out. And the Hurt Business says, Ali, you stand with us. The four of us are going to take them on. And Retribution won't get in the ring. So Mace and T-Bar are standing at the foot of the ramp, and Ali just gets out of the ring, walks up to him, stares him down, and MVP and Shelton and Bobby are like, watch this kid get his ass beat. This is going to be fun. And then Mustafa Ali turns around, faces the Hurt Business, and says, get him. And Mason T-Bar and the rest of... Slapjack is there too, but he is definitely not
nearly as important as Mason T-Bar, considering the fact that he's just out there with the other dudes in hoodies. There are a bunch of dudes in hoodies. We have not seen Reckoning or whatever the hell they're actually going to go with for Mercedes Martinez's name. We haven't seen them in a while. We don't know where the female members are. I'm presuming they're still around. But Mustafa Ali stands at the foot of the ramp while Mace, T-Bar, Slapjack, still those names are terrible and something's got to be done about them. And the rest of Retribution beat up the Hurt Business. Then Mustafa Ali slowly gets in the ring and Retribution comes in behind him. Meanwhile, Byron Saxton's having a fucking conniption about what has happened. Samoa Joe is also like, highly unusual. And Mustafa Ali stands in the middle of the ring and he does his pose that he's always done for a long time now, where he holds a hand up. And usually when he does his entrance, he's got like a little Iron Man light thing, right? Holds up the light. Be the light in a world of darkness, right? That was his thing. Holding up to the thing, and he smirks at the camera, at the hard cam. And then he closes his fist, and the lights go out. Today he tweeted out, "Lights out, WWE." So, Mustafa Ali is the leader of Retribution. We were talking forever. That's what I've been saving this for. Sprecher root beer. I need the sweetness now. I need it. I need it because I'm going to try not to be a Debbie Downer about this shit because I want it to be real so much. So, first hit of sweetness. Oh, that is so good. So sweet. Like the sweetness that would be if they actually did this right. Ali, as the leader of Retribution, he's an amazing talker. He can cut these awesome promos that he shoots himself, like on the streets of Chicago and shit when he went home and all that. God, they were so good. Using that style of promo to cut promos about Retribution and about what they stand for and all this kind of stuff could be so good. We need a guy who can really be a charismatic leader of a faction like this. T-Bar being the number one lieutenant, fine. Mace just being like the muscle, cool. Slapjack taking all the pins, great. Wonderful. But you need a charismatic leader to get everything done to begin with. And Mustafa Ali can absolutely be that. This is a guy who came back in July. And his return video in the span of a few days had over 2 million views. And nothing from that episode of Raw had anything close to that. People want to see him. So what do? They banish him to the main event for a while. Before that, since fucking December, he wasn't even on main event. He was on SmackDown, not doing anything. There was a chance maybe he'll be the hacker. More on that in a bit. So, this is a guy who's wanted to do something. He's wanted to be the light in a world of darkness. And they won't let him. So, fine. Fine. I'll be the darkness. The world is dark. I'm going to operate in that world. That's something they could easily do with him. And also what they could do with him is find a way to make him, to have him cut promos that are not lies. Okay, I'm going to drink this, but then I'm going to get negative. All of this is entirely negated if next week he comes out on Raw and cuts an "all you people" promo. then we're all fucked, and it's never going back. But if he comes out and says, our quarrel is not with you, the WWE Universe. I've talked to my friends. They understand the error of their ways. WWE Universe, you are not at fault here. It's WWE that has done this to you, that has made you into this, that you would treat my brothers this way, my brothers and sisters. But what has happened to these people? And at that moment, they unmask. That is critical. These fucking masks have got to go. T-Bar, Donovan Dijak. Here's what happens. He's got a specific thing that he is angry about, that like it was him and Keith Lee's amazing matches on that made NXT TV on the USA thing like really big. And Keith Lee got the big Survivor Series moment. Keith Lee got the War Games stuff. All this shit that made Keith Lee this. Keith Lee got the Royal Rumble moment. All this shit. But where was Donovan Dijak? I made the mistake of thinking you were my friend, which is why I challenged Karrion Kross. I made the mistake of getting choked out by him because I thought you would avenge me, and you lost like a bitch. And then you ran away like a coward to Raw, and you got there, and what happened? You let them change you. What are you wearing? What is that friggin', what is that? Was that singlet? I've never seen you wear anything like that. They changed your music. They changed you, man. The beard. What's the, like, and have Dijak be that's his thing. Very personal. Madden? I was in NXT forever. Dio Madden takes off the thing. Dio Madden, remember me? I used to be on the commentary desk. Why? Because it said it wasn't working out for me in the ring in NXT. How would they know? I was never on TV. They never once put me on TV. Then I was in the commentary desk, 205 Live. Then I got bumped up to Raw. Then you know what? I decided I'm going to stand up for old Jerry Lawler. When Brock Lesnar got in his face, Brock Lesnar F5'd him through a friggin' table. And you never saw me again. Nobody even checked to see if I was okay. I'm done. Shane Thorne, me, and Brendan Vink, and at this point, I don't fucking care if you do this or not. One of the guys in a hoodie takes the hoodie off. It's Brendan Vink. Why not have another guy who to take pins? Me and Brendan, we were the first guys that MVP took under his wing. He kicked us to the curb for Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. And Mustafa Ali says, 7 months. Got brought up from 205 Live, the first guy ever to get brought up from 205 Live to the main roster to SmackDown. I pinned Daniel Bryan. I was all ready, except for Randy Orton, broke my fucking eye socket, so I couldn't be in the Elimination Chamber match. I had to watch Kofi Kingston. Great guy, Kofi Kingston. I love Kofi Kingston. Takes my spot. Bittersweet, because what a great guy, what a great story. Rooting for him the whole way. Beats Daniel Bryan. Becomes champion. Is an amazing ambassador for this brand all over the world. What happens? You feed him to Brock Lesnar like he's a fucking pork chop. And he's never even sniffed the title scene since. And I know all about that. I was at the top of a ladder. And Brock Lesnar, who's not even in the goddamn match, comes down, knocks over a ladder, takes my Money in the Bank briefcase, my guaranteed shot at a championship. And I said to them, give me Brock Lesnar. I want a match with Brock Lesnar. Because he took my they said, no, you don't get a match with Brock Lesnar. By the end of the year, I was off TV. You didn't see hear from me for 7 months of my prime. I'm sitting in catering doing nothing. Again, this is not aimed at anybody in particular. Anybody in the WWE Universe or any of that. All that shit's got to go. Got to get out of the way. Just get it out of there. These are aimed at certain people who benefited from them being kept down, like the Hurt Business, like Keith Lee, whatever. And management. WWE management. WWE, the corporation. It would get over so well because everybody loves Mustafa Ali. They root for that guy. They want people really enjoy him when they're allowed to see him. New Day started out as a bunch of militant black preachers. Like, they were the Nation of Domination 2.0. And look what happened with the New Day. It took somebody figuring out a way to convince Vince to trust E and Kofi and Xavier. And look where it got them. One of the biggest acts. WWE, one of the biggest, one of the best tag teams in history. But they weren't supposed to be that. That thing that they were given, that was going to fucking fall apart. But they were able to spin it into something that worked for them. The same thing can happen with Retribution. You got to get rid of the fucking names. You got to get rid of the fucking masks. And let Mustafa Ali spin a yarn with his words, make us believe it. Now, none of that's going to happen. You took your faction that was obviously modeled after the Antifa protests that were going on in the summer, and you created as their leader the guy on the roster who was a cop and then left the force because he saw he couldn't make a difference from within as just one cop. You had to tear the whole thing down and restart from the scratch. He's given interviews on your own programming about this. He's the good cop who knew he couldn't take it down from within, so he's trying to use his platform outside the thing to figure out a better way of doing it. He is Antifa. Kind of. At least the defund the cops part. Because he knows what fucking happened because he was there. You turned that guy into the leader of your terrorist faction. And let's not, because believe me, there's no way this is lost on Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard and everybody else backstage. You made the guy who's the head of your terrorist faction a fucking Muslim. Because of course you did. But here's the deal, and I have to believe this. He has made his entire say in WWE about not being that guy. Because he tells the story over and over again. He's always told the story that they told him that he couldn't work unless he wrestled heel as an evil Muslim guy. With the fucking head wrap and everything, right? And he came down to the ring and he saw this little kid, 6 years old, like put up his fists with hate in his eyes. And I said, I taught that kid to hate people who look like me, people who have names like my name, people who come from where I come from. I taught that kid to hate me. I did that. Never again. So I have to believe that Mustafa Ali would not let that happen. That specifically, being a heel, fine. Being a heel because he's a Muslim, never. So I have to believe at least that part won't be touched on. Does it suck that they never figured out a way to utilize his natural babyface tendencies and a way to connect with people all over the world? Does it suck that they never fucking gave him a chance to be that guy that everybody roots for, to root for him from a losing streak to winning a title, to winning it all? Did they suck they never gave him that title? Of course it does. Is it amazing that they're putting him in this position as the leader of what needs to be a major faction in WWE? Yeah. If you brought up all this shit and did all this fucking stuff to just mire them in the mid-card, that's your fucking fault, man. That's your fault as a company that you couldn't figure out a way to make this important. How do you bring this whole fucking thing down from within? You get somebody from Retribution holding the WWE title, and that's how you bring the whole fucking thing down. So you put them in the main event. Also, and I believe Mustafa Ali knows how to do this if you let him do it, you can tie the whole thing together. I was the hacker in SmackDown. Now that storyline fizzled, as so many things do. Wasn't given time, wasn't given stuff to do. But I took everything that I learned as the hacker on SmackDown, and that's how Retribution is able to hack into everything. I've been doing that for them on the side. There's a lot that you can do sitting in catering with your back to the wall on a laptop with a Wi-Fi connection. Nobody ever thinks to come over and talk to Mustafa Ali sitting there on his laptop with his earbuds in. Nobody comes over and checks on me. Nobody comes over and sees how I'm doing. So I'm able to run everything at the Thunderdome through this baby because nobody gives a shit about me. Other things you could do to make this thing work. You can make the whole thing work. You can. You really can. Do I think they're going to? Do I think they're going to put in any effort into this at all? Do I think they're going to put these guys out there, just put them out there, throw them to the wolves and see what happens, let them die on the vine? Because they're not going to give them any sustenance, any food or water or sunlight. Just let them see. Sink or swim, boys. We give these ridiculous fucking masks and these even more ridiculous fucking names. Let's see what happens. And if you fail, it's your fault. Yeah, that's way more likely. But there exists a possibility that Mustafa Ali can charm his way into letting them have a chance with his words and his abilities and the abilities of the other guys in Retribution and women to really knock it out of the park. I think it's possible. I really do. Is it probable? No, but it's possible. And anyway, that moment of Ali holding up the Be the Light signal and then closing his fist and the whole thing going black, that's where Raw should have ended. Because after that, we got a completely run-of-the-mill, totally unsatisfying, totally just generic bullshit six-man tag that did nothing. Randy Orton got an LKO on Drew McIntyre to win the match. What does this mean? This is massive for Randy Orton. How? How is it massive? What does it do? What does it fucking do? Drew McIntyre has taken RKOs from Randy Orton in the past. He'll be fine. What does it do? What does this mean going into the draft? Fucking nothing! You had a huge reveal. Who's the guy who's been a mastermind? But like, listen, I know they didn't plan this. They didn't plan Ali being the mastermind behind Raw this entire time, obviously. But the storyline should be that, yes, he was. The storyline that Mustafa Ali says is, yes, I was pulling the strings this whole time. The puppet master this whole time. It was me all along, Austin. That's what we got to do with Mustafa Ali. But that's a huge reveal. That needs to be your main thing that happens instead of like, hey, we got this big reveal. What's so many questions come out of this? Do any questions come out of this fucking stupid six-man tag? No. It's a bullshit thing. It was so utterly inconsequential. You could have cut it out of the Hulu version edit and the 90-minute Hulu edit. Nothing would have been lost. Nothing would have been lost. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Who cares? You could really inject something fucking amazing into the main event scene with Mustafa Ali, helped by Donovan Dijak and Dio Madden, into the point where he's facing Drew McIntyre in basically a 3-on-1 match for the title. And you make Mustafa Ali last week, because he pinned MVP, and they're teasing that he was going to be going after the U.S. title of Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley tweeted out a picture of him holding the title, wearing a really nice suit. Mustafa Ali retweeted that picture and said, Bobby, you use this title to change your clothes. I would use it to change the world. Even you can't conceive of the weight of a phrase like Mustafa Ali, United States champion. How much that would mean to so many people all over the world. I think as recently as the middle of last week, maybe even late last week, they had no fucking idea this Mustafa Ali thing was going to happen. Because that was a pretty fucking white meat babyface thing to do, to be like, I'm going to use your title to change the world. But maybe he was some hidden meaning all along. I think the whole thing needs to start with Mustafa Ali taking the United States title from Bobby Lashley. And then you get the Hurt Business the fuck out of there, because they're better as heels anyway. I mean, believe me, I think that right now, Retribution with Mustafa Ali as the head, like, this is why I was saying it's so beneficial to what WWE, like Vince, wants to be able to have this thing done in an arena with piped in crowd noise, with piped in boos. Think about if they had done the Becky Lynch turning on Charlotte angle during COVID at SummerSlam, where she lost the match to Charlotte and she attacked her, beat her up. And they would have piped in boos for Becky turning on Charlotte. And then Becky would have cut a promo where she said, all you guys, you all forgot about me. And instead of the crowd visibly in the audience going, no, we didn't. No, Becky, we love you. We're rooting for you, Becky. Like, obviously, they were not going to be told by Becky that you hate me. No, we don't, Becky. We love you. The crowd made them reconsider turning Becky heel. If the crowd isn't there, if they can pipe in all the boos that they want, then Becky never turns babyface. We never get the man, Becky Lynch. That whole thing is gone. It's just adios, sayonara, it never happens. Heel Becky Lynch fades into the annals. We never even know it fucking happened. So, when Mustafa Ali goes out there and they tell him to cut the promo to signify him and Retribution as a heel, there would be a chance that if he did that in front of an actual audience, they would reject it and say, no, we actually like you guys. We hate WWE too. They fucking suck. So we're on your side. And maybe that would convince them of doing something different. But instead, they're going to have Ali go out there and do an all you people promo. You all forgot about me, all of you. And that's why we have to destroy you, bullshit. And then they're going to pipe in the booze and create the heel they need to have. Not organically, but corporately mandated. So yeah, there's a chance this could all work out. An incy-beansy, teeny-weeny, little, itty, infinitesimal, minuscule, little atom-sized chance. And there's a huge fucking chance it's going to be fucking terrible, you guys. Like, by Survivor Series, Retribution is disintegrated, doesn't exist anymore. And Ali goes back to catering. It could be over that fast, guys. So enjoy this moment while it lasts. That was Raw. This has been Sour Graps. I have been Alex Pawlowski. Optimism is a disease. WWE is the cure. Everything sucks.